Hello and welcome to a bonus Saturday DFS episode. Matt Harmon from Yahoo here chatting with my buddy, my good pal, my friend, TJ Hernandez from 4 for 4. A little pre-show business before we get into the meat of this DFS discussion here. Sign up for Yahoo Fantasy Plus. I mean, come on, the Trade Hub, give me a break. I talked about this on the podcast in the middle of the week with Dalton, but the stone worst question to get as an analyst, and TJ, I know you do more DFS stuff, but I'm sure you agree with this too. But the stone worst question is, here's my roster. Who should I trade for? I don't know. Try to do a trade that's good for the other person.
Yep.
Try to also make it good for you. But you know what? The Trade Hub at Yahoo Fantasy Plus, that can actually help you much more than I can, maybe a little bit more than TJ can. It's hard to say. Anyways, take it for a test drive with a free trial, yahoofantasyfootball.com/plus. All right, TJ, week two was an interesting week. I think we had a pretty good week on the podcast overall. Yeah. I thought it was pretty solid. Some of the picks turned out pretty well. Just before we jump into the positions, the players, everything, any kind of general thoughts about the way DFS has gone through the first 2 weeks or any big grand view ideas here?
Yeah, definitely about kind of a week two lesson that's leading into week three. And this is tournament specific, but I think one thing we don't talk so much about on this podcast, but because we're focusing on values, but a tournament idea in general that we're always talking about is how much we're going to play the most popular players or if we should be playing the most popular players. And what's going to happen this week is we're going to have a lot of players, the most popular players, they're not going to be that popular relative to other weeks because we have a lot of games. The teams that are supposed to be very high scoring, those players are all going to suppress each other's roster rates. So in a typical week, you might see a few players that are on 35, 40, sometimes even 50% of tournament rosters. Last week, and what's probably going to happen this week, is the most popular players are going to be in maybe 25% of rosters at the most. So those are the weeks, those are the situations where you can be willing to roster the most popular players, even in the biggest tournaments like the Yahoo Baller, because our focus in tournaments isn't the individual roster rate of each player. It's how much of an overall roster rate does your lineup carry? And we usually kind of want to be in that like 10 to 15% range. So if no players are going to be in more than 25% of lineups, it's pretty easy to get your lineup to that low of a roster rate. You still need one or two unique players, but you don't need to be fading the most popular, the best values that we're going to be talking about this week. The lineup's kind of going to take care of that for you.
That's a great point, because I think you can end up putting yourself in kind of a bit of a brain pretzel with like, oh, this is going to be the most popular running back of the week or whatever. But if it's only going to be 10-15%, it's much different than, I would say, for an example, if like Dalvin Cook doesn't play this week and Alexander Madison, like, you know, he's going to end up becoming the starting running back. And we've seen that with literally that player. We've seen that become a problem before too. And like, you know, the ownership rate gets absurd. And then we talk about then he doesn't perform pretty well. And then it's just a real nightmare situation. So there is some, I totally get what you're saying with the strategy there. Let's dive right into some players here, and starting with quarterback. Let's go for our most expensive guys and then our cheaper guys. You start first with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson priced at $35 against Detroit. He is 4-for-4's top value across all positions. There's six quarterbacks with a higher salary than Lamar Jackson. Our QB2 on 4-for-4, a great scoring environment for Lamar. The Ravens are projected to score just under 29 points based on their implied point total. Detroit's allowed the most yards per pass attempt this season through two games. We haven't seen the ceiling game through the air from Lamar yet. Obviously had pretty much a ceiling game last week on the ground, over 100 yards on the ground, 2 touchdowns. I think he could put that all together this week against Detroit, where we see him. He has those spots where he'll sniff that 300-yard mark, and obviously the touchdowns will come in bunches with Lamar. Against this Detroit defense, this is one that he can attack through the air. So loving Lamar, price down as the QB7.
Yeah, that's a great point, just like the value relative to the rest of the quarterbacks. And Lamar right now, I think, is obviously, as a rusher, we know what we're getting. But the fact that like Marquise Brown is playing extremely well, like Marquise Brown, people dogged on him so hard last year, but he, and at times he definitely deserved it, right? Sure. Like at times there were some pretty rough moments. But overall, like I think that he's really taken that next step, dating back to like week 12 of last year through the playoffs. Like, yeah, I think that that passing game is rounding into form, and they still don't even have Rashad Bateman yet. So I think the best is yet to come for Baltimore, but this is a good week to chase Lamar's ceiling. I'm going to just talk about Kyler Murray here. He's the most expensive quarterback. I really thought about going with Matthew Stafford. And I actually, in our analyst lineup for Yahoo, I did use Matthew Stafford at 36, but just wanted to share some of the notes on Kyler Murray here, especially. And number one, facing Jacksonville, there's your first note. They stink. They're terrible. I mean, what a nightmare of a defense. What a nightmare of an overall team. But Kyler Murray right now, I think the reason that he has taken this step as a passer, you know, because we haven't even really seen his rushing ceiling yet. You know, like compared to Lamar, we haven't seen the passing ceiling. We really haven't seen the rushing ceiling from Kyler Murray yet. But the reason the passing has taken the next step here, and why I think that he obviously is expensive this week, but I think totally worth the salary. 15 plus air yard throws make up 25% of Kyler Murray's attempts right now. The previous average over his first 2 years was 19%. 20 plus air yard throws, 18% currently this year. Previous average was sub 13%. His overall yards per attempt has jumped up to 10.1, was barely over 7. Like, the fact that they're gunning the ball down the field this year, I think, is huge for Murray's ceiling, to the point that even if he is the most expensive quarterback on the slate, great matchup. He is still, obviously, you know, all of his receivers are really rounding into form too, with Rondale Moore making plays. AJ Green, like, people hate AJ Green at this point in his career, but he is helpful for them. I think the fact that they have like a competent four receiver set goes a long way for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually going to be my point about Kyler. Is last year it was his legs and he was throwing a nuke. And now you could argue that he has, yeah, four legitimate guys. I mean, say what you will about AJ, but we saw Christian Kirk flash week one, Rondale Moore flash last week. And don't forget about Max Williams. Max Williams
was getting some work later.
He was getting some work last week as well.
Yeah, we'll be talking about Max Williams later. Don't you worry, my friend. Also, the Cardinals are passing on 43% of their first downs. Their previous average was 34%. Like, that's also shows, like, the one guy that everybody has the most questions about is the damn head coach, play caller, Cliff Kingsbury, but at least they're moving in the right direction in that fashion. All right, who is your cheap quarterback this week?
This is going to feel like a hold your nose play, but Daniel Jones at 25, and it looks like it's not so much going to be that we love Daniel Jones, but we love playing quarterbacks against Atlanta. They just look like a team that we're going to be targeting week in and week out. Their last and raw quarterback fantasy points allowed through two games. They've already allowed 8 touchdowns through the air. But on the not hold your nose for Jones, he's, depending on your scoring system, he's the QB4 through 2 weeks. Only Lamar Jackson and Jalen Hurts have more rushing yards than Daniel Jones. And that's the beautiful thing about fantasy football, right? Like, so many people get caught up in this player's not good. Well, maybe you're right, but the way fantasy points are scored, especially with the quarterbacks, is on the ground. And if he's going to be giving you 100-yard rushing games, we want to play them. The Giants have a 25.25 implied point total. And I think this can... I don't know if this game will shoot out, but the Giants have been around average pace, average plays. Falcons game have been pacing up, so they can push that Giants pace up a little bit too. So Jones can obviously get it done through the air against this defense. He's going to give you some points on the ground, and then it can be a decently paced game too.
Yeah, I think this game could shoot out. I think this could like be one of those type of games. And, you know, this could be Kenny Galladay's bounce back game, too. Mm-hmm. Like, all the peripheral numbers for Kenny Galladay are there. Obviously, just the results haven't been there yet. That could turn around this week. I know there's definitely a lot of people willing to throw out the squeaky wheel gets the grease theory with Kenny Galladay this week after he was upset with Jason Garrett. Get in line, pal. Everybody's upset with Jason Garrett. I'm gonna go simple here with this as well and just say Justin Fields at 23. You got to consider Justin Fields because he's scrambling, I think, on 16% of his dropbacks right now, which is absurd. I mean, that is such a high number. And basically what TJ just said, if your guy's gonna run, he's going to be good in fantasy at $23 this week. I think you have to consider Justin Fields. It's not like the perfect matchup. You know, Myles Garrett and company there against that Chicago offensive line is slightly troubling, but nevertheless, still think Justin Fields can get by with his legs alone.
Yeah, I mean, probably a theme that we're going to be continuing throughout the year, right? All four of our guys were talking about rushing. Quarterback rushing, yes, is the key to fantasy.
It really is, especially in daily fantasy, I feel like. Like, that was the kind of the thing with Matthew Stafford and, like, Tom Brady this week. I love that game environment, but, like, there's no rushing upside there. So what's
exactly
what am I really doing? Yeah,
and
exactly.
Those are the guys that are priced higher than Lamar. It's a crazy pricing week.
Yeah, it definitely is. All right, let's move to running backs. I like your pick here for your most expensive one.
I like it, and I don't want to say it's by default, but if we look at the high priced guys this week, you already talked about the Dalvin injury. We have CMC off the main slate. Derrick Henry, I think he'll be on the more popular side after his huge game last week. We don't know what to make of the Saints offense. So then we go down to Joe Mixon, priced down as the RB6. And you might say, well, that doesn't sound like he's priced down that far. RB6, he leads the league in percentage of team touches, 54% of team touches in each of the first two games. The Bengals are near the top of the league in neutral rush rate. And this is a game that I think people, if they haven't looked at the spread, it's going to be closer than they think. The spread's only 3 here, and this just looks like a pricing error. Like, Joe Mixon is one of the players. I think he should be in that $35, $36 range based on his usage. Down at $29, it's still a bargain for me.
My guess on the pricing here is that he didn't have like a monster game in the box score in week 2, and he's facing the Steelers, which I think always dings you a little bit, but like every damn Steelers defender has like a bad groin right now. Week, literally every player was like out, groin injury, out, groin injury. I mean, we'll see who ends up playing this week, but it's still part of the factor here. Also, I saw Zach Taylor said that just either today or yesterday, Thursday, as we're recording this, we're trying to establish the run right now so that we bring like a safety out of the box or whatever, like basically saying like, yeah, we're trying to be run first so then that we can pass, which is like, but you drafted a receiver 5th overall. Why? We don't have time to analyze the Bengals at this point, but I will give you a $29 running back as well. Austin Eckler, love the fact that his passing usage was back up. Obviously, 9 catches. Did anybody expect Austin Eckler to not start catching passes? Obviously, of course he was going to. Yeah, I hope not. Of course he was going to. You know, he was kind of the one Chargers guy that's, well, I mean, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen are absolutely crushing it. That was the disappointment of last week, man. I should have known. We talked about Amari Cooper all last podcast, man. I literally never play Amari Cooper in daily fantasy except last week. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just as guilty. I mean, that's just one of those game environments where penalties, a couple touchdowns called back because of penalties. We get a chance to rectify ourselves with the Chargers. That's a game. I don't think we're going to talk about a ton. We have, I think, one more player from that game, but Chargers Chiefs is one that we should definitely be targeting all around. He might actually be a nice little mini leverage play. Like, I think he'll be somewhat popular, but the pass catchers in that game will be much more popular. So Eckler's a really good pivot there.
Yeah, and the Chiefs have been just crushed by running backs so far. Obviously, some of their rushing numbers are beefed up because they just played Lamar Jackson. They also played the Browns in week 1, but still, they've allowed like 400 plus yards on the ground through 2 games. Like, it's, and they have at least tried to establish Austin Eckler as a traditional running back too. So we'll see if they can do some more of that against a team that's allowed over 400 yards and 7 touchdowns on the ground so far. Your next running back, by the way, I love this pick.
Again, this is just one that stands out as a straight salary error. Antonio Gibson priced as the RB19, $18 on Yahoo. I think this is probably an overreaction to the usage last week, to the McKissick usage going into
prime time, prime time bias, baby. It's prime time bias.
Exactly. And going into the year, like, I think we expected McKissick to have some role in this offense. We heard the Gibson is going to be get the CMC role in week 1. We got the CMC usage. Everybody was thinking Gibson is going to see every running back touch for this offense all year. I mean, I don't think we should have been expecting that. I think a 65 to 70% of backfield touches is what we can expect. And that's still very high usage. 70% is kind of that like bell cow mark that we're looking for. We know he's going to get usage in the passing game, even after last week's low usage, still top eight in the league in team touch share. And I think that's probably about where he should settle, like top 10, top eight in running back touch share. Like, he's not going to be number two, number three in the league like we saw in week one, but that's okay. The Bills have a really good pass rush, and I think they can use Antonio Gibson and McKissick still to neutralize that a little bit. But Gibson down is the RB19. That's just too low for me.
Yeah, way too low at 19. I mean, people are like basically have thrown all. We did a segment this week for the Survival Kit about players we're panicking on, and people are literally peeing their pants about Antonio Gibson. It's like all of the good indicators that we got from week one, it's like they just threw them out because we saw JD McKissick have that big game. McKissick did jack squat in week one, man. He had like one carry and was just basically pass blocking on all of his like passing snaps, you know? I mean, it's absurd that, like, that we've just thrown this out. I have questions about this game overall, and we'll get to those later, but if there's one player I like, it is Antonio Gibson. I mean, if you're listening to this too and like you're in season long, I want to trade for Antonio Gibson, and people are clearly, like I said, freaking out. He is a guy that, and maybe I'm saying this because
I already have the answer is that's who you trade for when people ask you, who should I trade for? Is it Antonio Gibson?
It's Antonio Gibson. That's the answer. Although usually because they've followed my draft advice, they have Antonio Gibson already, and that's why they're freaking out. Just like me. I have Antonio Gibson on all my teams too. So if anybody should have been puking about JD McKissick on week two Thursday Night Football, it was me. But I'm all right. We're centered. We're remaining calm here. My guy is also $18. Tyson Williams.
Love that.
Pretty simple here. Facing the Lions, I realize that there's going to be a committee situation here. Obviously, like, they're not just going to run Tyson Williams out there for every single snap. We know that. But I guess the way I kind of look at this Baltimore backfield right now is that Tyson Williams has kind of taken over the J.K. Dobbins role of this offense. And then Gus Edwards has been basically replaced by Latavius Murray. And Latavius Murray is just kind of he might do a little more passing down work than Gus was going to do. But I think that's kind of like from a split perspective, whatever you are projecting for J.K. Dobbins going into the year, I think you can project, which probably means that J.K. Dobbins is a little overdrafted before he got hurt anyways. But yeah. So, but whatever you were projecting for J.K. Dobbins, you could probably just project Tyson Williams to be in that. By the way, Tyson Williams is like top three in rushing yards over expectation, according to Next Gen Stats, because J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards were top three in that stat last year. It's just a great rushing ecosystem that you want to be invested in because of the fact if they were playing at home, I think he'd be even more of a smash. But still, we expect Baltimore to be in a positive game script over this Lions team. They've been bad against the run. We know what Aaron Jones just did to them. We know what the 49ers did to them in week one. I think Tyson Williams is a little too cheap at this price.
Yeah, and I talked about Lamar, and we have a little bit more Ravens talk coming. So if you're playing multiple GPP lineups, obviously you're not going to play Tyson and Lamar together, but they're two guys that I think you could spread across your rosters.
So just on that real quick, why you would not play those two in the same lineup? Because my thought and my only like devil's advocate to this is that I do sometimes like to pair the quarterback and the running back, especially if you think they're just going to smash the opposing team. It's just an access to potentially all the touchdowns, which I guess with Lamar, you're kind of already getting that anyways because he's such a rushing threat on his own. Is that kind of the logic there, or am I an idiot for thinking?
No, I think it's viable in weeks where we have a team where their implied point total is just blowing the field away. In a week like this where we have a lot of teams kind of bunched in like 28 to 31 point range, you're going to need to be probably a little more perfect, unless you're just going with some kind of like huge Ravens team stack on both sides and hope the other games fail. But there's such a small likelihood of so many other games failing where cornering that one game is going to get you the nuts in a tournament. Whereas if they were the only team projected for like 32 and everyone else is projected for 27, we can have like a easier narrative as to where there's not other teams that are going to be getting five or six offensive touchdowns.
I guess in a world like back in the Saints eras when it was Kamara and Drew Brees, it made sense. You know, if the Chiefs had a good running back, it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
But that's a whole nother discussion point there. But yeah, I get what you're saying there. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. All right, let's move to wide receivers here. Starting off with your expensive guy.
I have a lot of thoughts just about kind of this similar group of wide receivers, but we'll talk about that more on Justin Jefferson at $28. I know one of your favorite wide receivers just as a talent, but from a DFS and fantasy perspective, these are the opportunities we want to be jumping all over. I don't think Justin Jefferson is going to be ignored this week, but this is a spot where I think if he was already balling like we saw last week or doing what Thielen has done in the first couple of weeks, he'd be a guy that's in like 35 or 40% of lineups. I think we're only going to see him in maybe 15 to 20% of lineups because Thielen is the top five wide receiver in terms of fantasy scoring, while Justin Jefferson's down like 28, 29. And that's really just has come down to touchdown variance. Justin Jefferson, he leads the Vikings in targets. He's sixth in the league in share of air yards, and he's cheaper than Thielen. So this is just a spot where he's cheaper. He's probably going to be less popular or the same roster rate as Thielen, as well as a bunch of other wide receivers in these high scoring environments in the similar salary range. This is just a spot where Justin Jefferson turns that usage into the fantasy upside that we want to see against Seahawks, where this game can just really shoot out.
I have a feeling I know where you're going to go with this whole wide receiver section based on another part of the outline. So I'll save that because I like the thought here. But anyways, obviously it makes a ton of sense with Justin Jefferson there. It just hasn't swung his way yet, but I think it absolutely could swing his way starting this week. My guy is Calvin Ridley here. I think probably will be a very ignored player in this range just because there are so many guys that are. There's guys like Justin Jefferson, then there's guys like obviously Cooper Kupp and Tyler Lockett and all that. We'll talk Debo, Debo's not on the slate, but like around the same pricing range or whatever, the guys who have crushed it so far this year, I think they will be very attractive to folks. Calvin Ridley obviously has not quite had the start that people imagined yet. The whole Falcons offense like has not been very good. And I do think I mentioned this game earlier with Daniel Jones. Like I could foresee a like sloppy shootout between these two teams here. Two bad teams. I don't think the Giants are good. I definitely think that the Falcons are not good. All the opportunities there for Calvin Ridley. You know, the only guys who have seen there's only been five players who have seen more than 50% of their team's air yards. Brandon Cooks, Debo Samuel, Tyler Lockett, Calvin Ridley, and Devontae Smith. That Devontae Smith one is pretty interesting as well. But yeah, I mean Calvin Ridley. The opportunity is there for him. The targets have been there too. He's seen 18 targets. So I'm not really concerned about him overall. And, you know, this Giants defense theoretically is good, but we saw Terry McLaurin cook up James Bradbury on Thursday Night Football. And like, obviously that's because Terry McLaurin is a superstar in my opinion, but I also think Calvin Ridley is a superstar. So like good players can beat tough matchups. I think this is a situation where Calvin Ridley could do that at a pretty low ownership.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that stood out to me about Calvin Ridley when I looked this week, he's 35th in target share. Obviously, like you mentioned, his air yard share is up. I don't think that is a signal of things to come. He's a player that should be near the top of the league in target share. And his target volume is fine, like you mentioned, just because they have thrown so much already out of necessity. But I like that target share to climb up towards like that 25% that we expect him to see. And then that's where he really starts tapping into that Calvin Ridley that we expected when we were drafting him as a top 20 fantasy player.
Boom. There we go. All right. Your cheaper receiver here is one who hasn't quite popped yet, but a lot of people were optimistic heading into this year.
Yeah. And this is, you talked about this game with Austin Eckler and the Chiefs and Chargers is a game environment, should be a very high scoring shootout. But one thing that we haven't seen from the Chiefs is if you're going to play them in DFS, it's basically been Mahomes, Kelce, or Tyreek. What we saw last week, they started getting their ancillary players involved. We saw Byron Pringle and Robinson. They both scored, but it was Mecole Hardman that saw a 28% target share and saw 51% of their air yards in week two. That's obviously not going to happen every single week because you have Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce on your team. But the reason that happened, Baltimore did a very good job of bracketing Tyreek, taking him out of the game. Tyreek's not going to see four targets, whatever it was, every single game. But the Chargers have a similar defense in that they are very good at preventing the long plays. They've allowed just one completion on passes thrown 15 yards or more down the field. Now, can that be Hardman's game? Obviously, but I think when you look at that, what comes to mind is a defense that's going to look to take away Tyreek again. That doesn't mean that Tyreek can't get his, but if you're playing this game and playing it in a lot of spots, Mecole down at $11 just makes a lot of sense to have in your player pool.
You know, I liked what I liked a lot of what I saw out of him in week two, and it's just gonna, you know, it's the salary is gonna help you get some access to some higher players there. Exactly. I'll bring up Van Jefferson in this spot, like as another cheaper player in a great game environment that we like, obviously with the Bucks and Rams there, two high scoring offenses. Van Jefferson at this point, like he's not, I'm not saying he's supplanted Robert Woods, but he's run more routes than Robert Woods has through two games. Like, I think at the end of the day, obviously Robert Woods is the better player. He's going to be the better fantasy receiver. But the point of this is that Van Jefferson has clearly established himself as a role player on this team. You know, we know that he had the absurd air yards mark from week one, the big long catch, but he still was at 11.3 air yards per target in week two. Same amount of routes as Cooper Kupp in that game. Like, so the involvement is there for Van Jefferson, and he's just a guy that I think could slip behind a secondary that's been okay but had some lighter has had some rough moments through the first couple weeks. The Bucks secondary is still young, still growing. Obviously Sean Murphy Bunting, their slot corner, is out right now. So yeah, I think Jefferson's just like a nice flyer in a very good game environment that also is seeing maybe not some overall target volume but at least some playing time in a good offense.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw that wide receiver two or wide receiver three, pass catcher three role, however you want to say it's going to play out. In LA, a team that's going to throw a lot and throw very efficiently after Kupp and probably Woods. I mean, we saw Higbee have his spike game in week one, fell off in week two. And I think Higbee and Van Jefferson, they're going to see a lot of that back and forth. But it's a offense where a third player has a lot of upside because Stafford is going to continue to keep this offense very efficient through the air.
And I think the Rams defense is good still, but they're not. We knew they weren't going to be as good as last year, but they're certainly not, just from a schematic standpoint, they're not quite doing the exact same things they did with Brandon Staley there last year. Obviously, Raheem Morris is a guy who's been around forever. So they're kind of doing a few things different there in LA, which I think is going to, you know, lead this game to be more high scoring than it, you know, you'd usually imagine with a great defense like LA. So I want to get a cheap piece here. I think Van Jefferson is the cheap piece. All right, let's move to tight ends. You mentioned Baltimore earlier. We're back on Baltimore with this one.
Yeah, Mark Andrews at $19. Again, he's just priced quite a bit lower than some of the top guys like Kelsey and Waller. And we haven't seen that elite usage that we usually see from Mark Andrews that's similar to the Kelsey and Wallers and Kittles, but got back up to that 20% target share last week. And again, like we talked about with Calvin Ridley, I expect that to keep growing because this is an offense. Obviously, Sammy Watkins has been involved early on, but we still expect that Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown are the primary two targets. And the Lions, they have allowed 78 yards or a touchdown in each of their first two games to opposing tight ends. We already talked about the fact that they've been one of the worst teams in terms of efficiency allowed through the air. And if Lamar Jackson's going to have a ceiling passing game, I like pairing him with his best touchdown scorer in Mark Andrews.
You don't want to play Gronk this week at 25 again?
Oh man.
Did somebody
make fun of the pricing on Gronk? Because I thought the pricing was really sharp on Gronk last week.
Yeah, we were so that? We
it
played
was like a really, really good pricing.
Dude, we played Gronk in every lineup, me and you. Absolutely. Every single one. We definitely didn't laugh about this being like 2011 or something. We were definitely dead on with our Gronk analysis from last podcast. So that's why you tune in every single week to listen to this one. If you are listening for the first time this week, welcome to the show. Definitely don't listen to definitely don't verify anything that I just said. I was going to talk about TJ Hockenson here. That feels too easy. I'll make a case for Noah Fant, though, who has been surprise, obviously very involved. We know that this target distribution has been constricted with Jerry Jeudy out. I love Cortland Sutton's usage from last week, but this is also just a bet on the Teddy Bridgewater version of the Broncos offense. And, you know, it's funny because last year, obviously, Drew Locke was throwing 20 plus yards down the field more than any other quarterback. We thought that was because Drew Locke is Drew Locke, but maybe it's just part of the Broncos offense because Teddy's been slinging it downfield. You know, he's top three right now in completion percentage over expectation. I know Noah Fant is questionable right now, but if he plays in this matchup against the Jets, where I think the Broncos are going to smoke the Jets, man, I mean, give me a break. So yeah, it's a good defensive matchup overall. Fant's getting good usage. He's just $17. I like that there.
Yeah, I like that too. And I like the Teddy call. I mean, he's him and that passing game in general, just one that have been popping up as a sneaky start or a cheap DFS play. If we look at what worked in the baller last week with all of the very high scoring offenses and popular quarterbacks, we saw a cheap Teddy stack take down the tournament with mini stacks from the other game. So I actually kind of like running that back this week.
Yeah. I mean, this, like I said, this offense has been efficient. It's been good. We know that there's a lot of good players there. It's surprising. It really is surprising, not just that they're this good, but again, it's how they've been good. It was, like I said, Cortland Sutton, I almost picked him for a receiver or flex spot in this week just because the target share was great last week. The fact that he averaged 20 plus air yards per target was insane. and overall, like I said, this team has been good. It's been efficient. And really the shocking part of it to me is just that they have been throwing the ball downfield. Like, I didn't expect that. Teddy Bridgewater has thrown 18% of his passes 20 plus yards down the field. Like, you know, Russell Wilson's up there at 20%. That, and then there's Teddy Bridgewater in terms of guys that have started both games. What world are we living in?
Yeah,
I love it, but what world are we living in?
All of a sudden, Pat Shermer is Daryl Bevel. He just wants to chuck the ball downfield and let it rip. So who knew?
Pat Shermer's back, man. he's back. All right, let's talk cheap tight ends here. Speaking of Pat Shermer, you know, everything in the NFL connects. We're back to Cleveland, his old team.
Austin Hooper down at $12. This is an offense that the Cleveland Browns, they're in a pretty good spot this week. But the problem is down Jarvis Landry, could possibly be down Odell Beckham. They've already shown heavy tight end usage. If you look at Sam Hoppins' usage rates on 4-for-4, he has both Hooper and Njoku near the top of tight ends in weighted opportunity rating and targets per route run. We saw Higbee targeted for Chicago in week 1, and this is a spot where I think that Baker, when he does throw, he's going to have to lean on his tight ends. We have seen Joe pop a little bit, but Hooper's been right there in usage, so I like Hooper down at $12 to open up some salary this week.
Yeah, I'll stay in the $12 range too with the aforementioned Max Williams. We talked about him earlier. He popped up last week. You know, he's running a decent amount of routes. He's run 46 routes. That's ahead of Rondale Moore, everybody's new favorite player. So Max Williams has been on the field. You know, he's about half of his snaps, 54% of his snaps are passing plays. So obviously he's going to be down there more in rushing downs overall, but it's just a cheap dart throw and an attachment to Kyler Murray. We talked about at the top about all of the appealing parts about Kyler Murray's game, how he's throwing it on first down, how he's throwing it more down the field. This is just, again, a very cheap way to access some of Kyler's upside.
Yeah, that whole offense, I think if you are going to play Kyler this week, he's so expensive that you can offset that with – a lot of people are going to try to do it with Rondale, but doing it with Max Williams is a really nice way to kind of balance out Kyler's really high salary.
That's what we in the business call contrarian. remember when it was like, if you played a drinking game back in like DFS podcasts in like 2015, you would, if you took a shot every time someone said contrarian, you'd be in the hospital.
Yeah, maybe not with a pulse if after a while.
Yeah, maybe just take a sip. Don't take a shot every time you say it. Anyways, let's move on to defenses. I love your pick right here because I almost, TJ, almost had the fortitude to put Michael Pittman as my flex play after he had his big breakout week. But then I see headlines this morning that Jacob Eason is going to be potentially splitting work with Brett Hundley. Mm-hmm. And I think the correct move is not to talk about Michael Pittman as a flex play and talk about your pick here for defenses.
Yeah, we have a defense that is, they're only favored by 5 at home against, I guess they're going to be playing against 2 backup quarterbacks because they're going to be splitting time. So usually we're targeting 1 backup quarterback. Here we get to play 2. This Titans defense, they are top 8 in adjusted sack rate, according to Football Outsiders. Indy has allowed pressure near the bottom of the league. They've allowed the 9th highest adjusted sack rate. And I actually think spread is only 5 here with these backup quarterbacks and the Titans being able to have a pretty decent pass rush. I think this can turn into a big blowout scenario. I mean, we saw Tannehill kind of get it going last week, but it was Derrick Henry that got all the scoring, but Tannehill had a really nice passing game yardage-wise. I think this is the game against backup quarterbacks where they just get it all going and get out to a huge lead. And those blowout scenarios are where defenses can really blow up. So Titans as home favorites down all the way at the minimum of $10. And again, I mentioned Derrick Henry earlier. Defense and running back correlate very highly. And I think there is a clause in Derrick Henry's contract that he has to go for at least 200 yards in half of his games against his own division. I think that's right.
Yes.
So this is going to be one of those games.
That's how he hits the bonuses. Okay. So shout out to you, Derrick Henry, for hitting the bonuses every year. Yeah. I mean, listen, the reason I thought about Michael Pittman still, despite those backup quarterbacks, is that the Titans defense stinks out loud. They're so bad. But those quarterbacks are really bad. Yeah. The one caveat I'll give on the offensive line for the Colts is that I kind of think it's not a coincidence that every offensive line that Carson Wentz plays behind ends up looking bad, because Carson Wentz just takes sacks and takes pressure. Mm-hmm. But I feel like old Brett Hundley and Jacob Eason will help us out there too. So I love your pick here on the Titans. I think I might switch to the Titans in all my lineups. But
yeah, I was going to bring up that the sacks are a quarterback stat and the Wentz point, but then I thought, hey, these guys are probably just as bad.
They could be. It can always be worse. Don't ever say it can't be worse, because it can always be worse. My pick here is a little more straightforward. It's the Raiders at $16. Speaking of sacks or quarterback stat, I don't know in this case if that's the truth, because the Dolphins offensive line stinks. Like, they're, Brian Flores has called them out. They've called themselves out in like the press and all that. So pretty problematic. Max Crosby and those guys up front are cooking for the Raiders. I think if you're going to just go with a less risky defense, even though I think I like TJ's pick more than mine, if you're going to go less risky, I think it's the Raiders against Jacoby Brissett starting this week behind a bad offensive line.
Yeah.
They scored 0 points, TJ.
I was just going to say the Bills, 2021. The Bills dominated that offensive line to a point of, it wasn't even after halftime. Like, the shutout almost felt inevitable. That's how much they were dominating. It looked rough for Miami. And yeah, with Brissett back there now, we talked about Teddy Dink and Duck. Brissett, he might not throw a pass longer than 5 yards this week.
You can't get shut out in the NFL in 2021, man. Like, give me a break. That is beyond
pretty hard to do.
All right, let's talk about our flex plays here. I love your suggestion as well.
Yeah, I think the kind of the theme of this episode is we've kind of targeting offenses right now. We talked about Baltimore. We talked about the Chargers and the Chiefs. You talked about Van Jefferson. I'm going to Robert Woods at $25. He saw just two fewer targets than Cooper Kupp last week. He had a 31% target share. He had more air yards than Cooper Kupp last week. Again, this is an offense going into the season. I think we touched on this briefly last week. Things that we think we could be pretty confident is this offense is going to be somewhat concentrated pass game between Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. It does look like Cooper Kupp's going to be the 1A, but people are going to look at the scores last week from Cooper Kupp, kind of not look at the fact that him and Robert Woods had pretty much the same usage. You could argue Woods actually had more usage upside last week. And this is a game that you're going to talk about shortly. The scoring environment is very good on both sides of the ball. And I like the idea of mini stacking this game, because both of the quarterbacks, even though they have a lot of passing upside, neither of them are mobile, but you can get correlation in this by just pairing multiple receivers from it.
Yes, we love this game environment. We've been saying that all episode, and that is why my flex pick here is Chris Godwin at 22. By the time you listen to this, you might know whether, like, Antonio Brown's status. He's been on the COVID list. If he doesn't play, then obviously the target totals between Gronk, Evans, and Chris Godwin are constricted, and you love that. But either way, been saying it all week, you have to just play the Tampa Bay receivers and just, like, figure it out. And I think Godwin, though, is the one who's going to have the most consistent role. 72 snaps from the slot. He leads the team with 19 targets. Like, we're finally kind of seeing the Brady-Godwin connection here. And I mentioned that the Rams defense probably isn't as good as last year. Even last year, when these two teams faced off, Chris Godwin had 10 targets, 7 catches, and a touchdown, because he's that quick, short area threat for this team. And he's just a baller. He shouldn't be at 22, man. He should not be at 22. That's ridiculous. So I love Chris Godwin as a potential smash play, like, with or without Antonio Brown. But obviously, if Antonio Brown is out, then the ceiling is even higher.
And we didn't plan this, but if you check out the stacks to target for the Yahoo Baller article on Yahoo by yours truly, you might see a mini stack of Robert Woods and Chris Godwin.
Well, there you go. We are just on the same wavelength. All right, let's talk about your fades. Well, I'll just give mine first because I think yours are more interesting. I just don't really feel too drawn to the Bills and Washington passing games overall this week. There are so many good game environments that we've talked about, so many interesting situations that we talked about. The one I don't have a good feeling. It's okay to say when you don't know, and I really don't know how this Bills-Washington game is going to go. I mean, Taylor Heinicke, my guy, the pride of ODU, is playing extremely well, right? Like, from an efficiency standpoint, he looks good. I mean, but he could still have that crater moment at any point, I think. And yeah, the Bills defense has played well. Obviously, we just talked about what they did to the Dolphins. Like, so I could see Heinicke and the Washington offense going either way. I could see, you know, the Bills offense hasn't really quite popped yet. Washington's defense isn't playing up to expectation, but they could kick it into high gear at any point. The Bills offense could kick it into high gear at any point. So because of all these questions, I just didn't feel particularly drawn to any of those passing game players and have just been looking elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's two defenses that we know or expect Washington to have an excellent pass rush. Bills have had an excellent pass rush for through the first couple of weeks, and it just really widens the range of outcomes. Like you mentioned, Heinicke, obviously, it's a wild card of what we're going to get. Josh Allen, as great and as efficient he's been since the beginning of last year, against good pass rushers, I mean, he can be careless with that ball. We see him fumble the ball a lot. So it's a game where both defenses can cause quite a bit of havoc. So I would say the range of outcomes is very wide in this game at the very least.
Exactly. Yeah, I just don't have a good feeling for it. TJ, your fades, as you listed on the doc, Cooper Kupp, Adam Thielen, Tyler Lockett. Correct me if I'm wrong, but your theme basically looks like here, these 1A, 1B receivers that have been white hot to start the year. You obviously talked about Justin Jefferson and Robert Woods, didn't mention DK Metcalf, but like clearly you're kind of expecting the tide to turn back to these other great players in the passing game. Therefore, these three players that have been, like I said, white hot to start the season are on your fades list.
Yep. I tweeted about it earlier in the week that I'm calling week three the early season reversion week for wide receivers. These are all scenarios, like you said, they're 1B, 1A situations. And Kupp, Thielen, Lockett, they've all had pretty much similar usage or even less usage than their teammates, Robert Woods, Justin Jefferson, and DK Metcalf. And what we usually see is that that usage translates to very similar fantasy output. Kupp, Thielen, Lockett, they've been on the positive side of the touchdown where their teammates haven't been. So they're all either similarly priced or in Robert Woods' case versus Cooper Kupp, actually a pretty significant discount to them. DK Metcalf is $1 more Lockett, and Adam Thielen's $2 more to Justin Jefferson. But it's just spots where all three of these 1A, 1B situations have receivers that just haven't performed up to their usage. It's only through 2 weeks. But we want to hit these spots before they blow up. And it's just all spots where Woods, Jefferson, and DK are in great high scoring scenarios, great offenses, efficient passers, and teammates that have really blown up. So it's going to keep their roster rates down. So, I mean, I'm not saying Kupp, Thielen, Lockett are bad plays, but we have tremendous opportunity by targeting their teammates this week.
I love that. Yeah, it's just the opportunity part of it. And, you know, I talk about players that people are panicking about. A bunch of people are panicking about DK Metcalf. And, like, you always think that people, you always forget how, like, results-based people can be. And then you've got a situation where people are like, oh, DK's not as important in this new offense. He has the same amount of damn targets as Tyler Lockett. Yeah. People are literally freaking out about it. So the other guy who's been white hot to start the year, TJ, Deebo Samuel. So you're also telling me Brandon Ayuk, Sunday Night Football is happening? All right. Podcast over. That's enough. TJ, tell the people out there, if they found this from the Yahoo feed, what they're going to find on the DFS MVP feed.
Yeah, this will also be on the DFS MVP feed. In addition to that, every Friday, we are doing our live stream at 3 p.m. Pacific time, where we're covering values across the industry. On Sunday mornings, our GPP Last Look show for our subscribers on Discord. And then Mondays, one of my new favorite shows, Cash Game Lineup Reviews, where we're looking back at Sunday, seeing where we hit, seeing where we missed, seeing where we could change our process. That is at 11 a.m. Pacific time, streaming on YouTube.
Absolutely love it. If you found this from the DFS MVP feed, obviously go check out the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast. I'm on two other episodes per week, the midweek Thursday show with Dalton Del Don, where we dive into our advanced stats notebook, the little stats nerd podcast on Thursday, recap Sunday night games, recap all the games on Sunday night with Liz Loza, and there's a bunch of other episodes from a bunch of smarter people all throughout the week, so make sure you subscribe to that. In the meantime, as my dogs are barking here to end the podcast, I'm at @MattHarmon_BYB. That's @TJ Hernandez. Check us out on Twitter @YahooFantasy. We are out.